Hello everybody, this is Dave with Heavy Reverb. Nice to have you guys along for another podcast. Today we are talking about why sometimes you just need to use an amp instead of the Kemper, and sometimes that's just probably the best solution. We're talking about some bad gigs and bad experiences I've had in the last 2 weeks. It's very rare, but these things happen. Talking about a new pedal I got to replace my Expression pedal that instead of one thing, it does three different things, so stay tuned for that. And I've got a Black Keys inspired track for you all. So, enjoy! Hello everybody, this is Dave. Nice to have you guys along again. Thanks for streaming, downloading, whatever you're doing. Hope you are doing well. I've had an interesting couple of weeks. So last week I had a really bad gig, and it wasn't because of the band or us being unprepared. I was just hired to play for this singer-songwriter, and I played them heaps, and great band, great songs. It came down to the sound. Usually we just get a sound guy, you know, it'd be part of the plan to just hire a sound guy in. But this time they're like, oh, we'll just use the in-house guys. So we show up to this gig, in-house guys just did not know what was going on. It took a long time to set everything up, and I kind of clocked on that halfway through setting up, maybe like 20 minutes in, I was like, man, these guys don't have a clue. We're going to be here for a while. Yeah, I'm just going to have to take measures to make sure, you know, my sound is okay. So I had the Kemper and my Vox AC15, and like most of the time I bring both, and to see, well, for cases like this, I just kind of scope it out and then I use whatever I think is appropriate. If we've got our own sound guy, he knows my sounds, he knows what I go for usually. Plug the Kemper in, just send, you know, DI it. Most of the time I don't even stereo DI it. I just mono straight out. Great. That's all you need. Just flatten the EQ. And then depending on the room, you just adjust the EQ. But most of the time, it's okay. But for this one, I clocked it. I was like, nah, I'm just... Kemper stays in the car for this one. I'm going to have to bring out the Vox. So I set up the Vox, stick it on. I was like, oh, it probably just needs a mic. Most of the time, I bring my own mics, but I tend to... I try to avoid using my own stuff. Because like, if somebody knocks down a microphone, you know, it's just an extra expense that I don't really want to claim on insurance. So what happened is I set up the Vox, get all my sounds ready. I'm like, sweet, like I'm cool, I'm good to go. They come to mic the cab, and clearly they didn't know how to mic a guitar cab. I was like, what is going on? Like, they seem to, you know, if you look at them, you're like, oh yeah, they know what they're doing. But they came to mic the cab, and honestly, it was awful. The stand was about a foot away from the actual cab. The mic pointing up in a weird angle. I was like, whoa, I'm just going to have to do stuff myself. So, I mean, thankfully, and I advise this for anyone like starting out or, you know, starting to play gigs, just know what your equipment sounds like and what's best for your sound. So know how to mic a cab. Know exactly where the cone is, and know if you're working with a 57, where to position that. If it's like a 906, know where to position that. Just know how to do just basic stuff to get your sound as best as possible. Because at the end of the day, that's your sound, that's your tone. And it's not only your guitar. You can have the most expensive guitar, but if you don't mic it properly, if you don't mic the cab properly, it's worth garbage. So I had to do that, you know, and I just had to fiddle a lot. And thankfully, I've got the JHS color box. And what you can do there is just... And the EQ settings on that are really powerful. So I just EQ'd it the way I thought it sounded best and send that out. And, you know, fingers crossed, everything's all right. Now, the next thing that kind of took ages to do was the singer that plays. She usually uses like a Tissy Helicon pedal where you plug your guitar in. It kind of identifies what key you're in, and then it harmonizes your voice accordingly. So we're there for a while going, this isn't working. What is going on? And like, she's got her own setup now where it's like, she's got all the DIs in place. She's got the pedal, she's got a tuner, like everything's in place. So you just need to plug a few XLRs in and it's just good to go. We're there for a while, probably like a good, no exaggeration, about 20, 30 minutes, going, why is this not working? The sound goes like muting channels, and he had everything on an iPad. So I don't know if it was a new iPad system or I don't know what he was doing, but he was muting tracks and enabling other tracks. I was like, can we just do the basic thing and take the XLR, put a microphone on it, talk through it and find it, find the signal. Lo and behold, both XLRs that he was using for her setup were bust, were broken. I was like, it took you guys about 20 minutes to figure out that those XLRs were bust. So I was just getting a bit, I had to kind of walk away. And most of the time, well, all the time, I try to be as nice as possible. And in this case, the nicest thing I could do is just walk away for a bit and not say much. Because like it or not, it does affect the atmosphere. It kind of affects the whole vibe. So if one of us is kicking off, like you probably know or have a friend that, you know, the temper is a bit weird. So that just kills a vibe automatically. And when you're playing music, you don't want to do that. You don't want to kill a vibe. So kind of got through that. To top it off, we were using like in-ears and he didn't have enough mixes. So I had to use the same mix as the bass player. And I was like, all right, whatever. I was like, you know what? You mix whatever you want to do. Cause he plays bass, keys and like bass synth. I was like, you do your mix and I'll work around you and I'll use my cab as the monitor. We'll just do that. So we get going and first set kick in. The RF on our in-ears was horrible. For everybody out there, this is what happens when you choose to buy cheaper gear compared to like the actual gear that you should buy. And especially for a PA company, like don't scrounge on gear. You need to get like the best gear you can possibly get. Now you can get like the Shure in-ear monitor system. That's like every time I've used that, it's been solid. The brand I saw on them, I didn't even know of. I was like, I hoped it worked. Kick in, the RF was horrible. I can barely hear anything. And apparently what was happening is they had power issues. So whenever the power would cut out, it affected everybody's mix. And mainly because sound guy wasn't saving the settings on his PA. So he'd set it, wouldn't save it. And then the power would go off. And I'm thinking halfway through this, I was like, this is probably the first time in a long, long time I've had to do a gig like this where it's just not great. It's not good. It's not really not good. You kind of power through it and you do your set and, you know, make sure you're performing and delivering because you're getting paid at the end of the day. So you do your part, but man, all this stuff affects you so much. So when you're buying gear, just buy the best possible. Like you might save $20 or $30 on a microphone, but to be honest, just buy the proper microphone. I was talking to someone the other day about them starting a podcast and, you know, they were just asking for some advice. They were like, oh, I'll just get this one, this microphone. I can't even remember the brand. They were like, I'll just buy this microphone. You know, I know the SM58 is like the one you're after, you know, the one you should have, but this one's like $20 or $30 cheaper. So I might just go with that one. I was like, you know what? Just buy the Shure. Buy this SM58. They're solid as anything. If you want to resell it, you can sell it for the same price you got it for. And they're just solid. You know that when you're recording, it'll just record. You won't have anything cut out. You won't have any weird buzzes, crackles. They just work. And sometimes you just need stuff to work. Now, yeah, for this one, for this gig, I didn't use a Kemper. Because, man, gosh, that would be a nightmare. Sending the XLRs out and then, gosh, that would have been hilarious. I wouldn't even hear. Like, I could barely hear what was playing in this one. So most of it was, I don't want to say guesswork because I knew all my parts and knew I had all the presets programmed, but it was a bit of a guesswork to be like, I think this sounds right. Like, yeah, let's just go for it. And sometimes you just need to do stuff like that and just dig in, go in hard and hope for the best. Other than that, the gig was great. And I enjoy playing with these guys a lot. They're good fun. And we're talking about it later, you know, over a pint of beer or whatever, and I was telling about what my criteria of taking on a gig would be. So I've got three criterias. One of them is do it for money. Second one is do it with good people and friends and to have fun. And third one is good music. I think if you have 2 out of 3 of those, it's a gig worth doing. So making money, playing good music, doing it with fun people and good friends. So for this one, I'd say it was a 3 out of 3, but man, the technical difficulties just made it really, really hard to do. So I think for the next, and also if you're going to tour around and, you know, do gigs, if you can afford to get your own sound guy with you, it makes a whole lot of difference. Sometimes it's even better having a sound guy with you instead of a band member. I know I'm a musician and I play, but for the sake of the band and the music and the overall sound, man, sometimes it's better to ditch a, you know, band member and be like, you know what, we'll just make sure the sound is good for this one. Which, yeah, that statement kind of shoots me in the foot, but I think it's true. Anyways, but that was a bad gig, but man, golly, I hope I don't have any gigs like that anytime soon. Another one I had recently, I got booked ages ago to be a part of a function band. Playing literally for those function band gigs. If you guys out there do any functions, they kind of look like this. You get 30 songs in a location, you show up, play, get paid, and go home. Most of the time, you never play with the people playing with. You've never met them sometimes. Like on this one, I didn't even know the bass player. Like I met him right there and then. So it's a lot of guesswork, a lot of looking around, and usually the band leader kind of helps you out. So this was fun. So I agreed to this one ages ago. I tend to not want to take those kind of gigs on, but I was like, there's nothing in the calendar. So if there's nothing in the calendar, you need money, you just book stuff in. So last time we did this gig, there was a set fee. I was like, cool, yeah, that's the normal fee. I'll take a bit of a hit on petrol. I'll pay my own petrol. Hopefully I'll get someone Lyft and we can split it. But for this one, I just assumed the fee was what I got paid last time. Ends up being 2/3 of what I got paid last time. And I think it might be my own fault for not making sure and not checking. I'd always check a few things when it comes to money and all this kind of stuff and people asking you to do things for them that would eventually, you know, make them a profit. Agree on price. And I'm kind of learning this the hard way. Agree on price and ask what the budget is if they're asking you to provide a service. Those two things would probably make you money and not get stuck in a bit of a disagreement or a weird spot. Like, you know, you want to be friendly and all, but sometimes you need to stand your ground. So asking what the budget is could make you a bit of money, and it kind of stops them assuming that you do it for free or for, you know, a cheaper price, because, you know, you're trying to be friendly and all. So sometimes friendliness comes across as, I'll give you a massive discount. But who knows? Maybe you want to give discounts, and that's cool as well. I do it all the time. But the on this one, it was like 2/3 of the price, and I'm breaking it down and how far the place is. I'm like, I don't even know if this is worth it. Is it worth it? I'm trying to think. I try to be a man of my word, and I'm like, for this one, yeah, I've got 2 gigs with them. I'll do the gig. That's fine. Pay me whatever. I can't make you guys pay me more if you're not getting paid more for the gig. I should have just asked and made it clear. So, yeah, that happened. But from that, and this is the funny thing, I decided I'm going to do this with the best attitude possible. Be friendly and, you know, do the gig and just have fun. We had loads of fun. They have a horn section as part of the band, and it sounds killer. It's like, it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of looking around because obviously some of the songs they've got different arrangements for. So I'm just looking around for cues. But it's a fun gig, if I'm honest. It's a really fun gig to do. So coming back to the bass player, it was one of his first gigs with the band. Great guy. Got chatting. And he comes over to check out my pedal board. And I was like, yeah. A lot of people just see the pedal board and like, do you actually need all that? I'm like, look, for this gig, I don't. I'd probably just use a tiny bit of slapback delay and 2 overdrives, and that's about it. But if any of you guys have a pedal board and you're a working musician, you know that to split that thing up is more hassle than just putting in a flight case and taking it somewhere. It's a big pedal board, but I can just take it in a flight case, put it at the back of a boot, and just go. But if I was to split everything up, A, I don't possibly have the options I'd like. B, I'd have to split everything up. And then the power, I have to split up. It's just stupid. preferably I'd have a little fly rig board where I'd have what I need, but it's easy enough to just stick it in the back of a boot. So I just do that. So I'm talking to this guy, talking through the pedal board, and he turns around and he's like, oh, I make pedals as well. So he's talking about this Dumble overdrive he's made with, like, he's kind of split some of the controls. He's made a clone. He sent some of his pedals down to Denmark Street in London for them to sell. We kind of got chatting and yeah, he's going to send some stuff to me and can demo the stuff. And I was like, dude, I can film it. I can do a bunch of stuff to just put your stuff, you know, put your product out there. And I think it'd be really fun. So I'm just going to make some tracks with the overdrive and see what happens. But it's just all these connections. And what it comes to show is that sometimes you might have a bad gig booked, or you might be in a situation that you don't want to be in, really. But from that, if you keep a good attitude, some good stuff might happen. And sometimes it might not bring money, but you'll learn, you'll have fun, and you'll have some different connections from it. Now, if I had a bad attitude, it was really tempting to do. Like, I'm a pretty patient person, and I don't hold grudges. I think that's really, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but I try not to hold grudges. So for this one, I was like, man, just be a nice guy. Just be a nice person. It's like, comes down to basic human principles. Just be nice. And like, good stuff comes from it. And it's, if I had a bad behavior about it, man, they'd be like, oh, you know, nobody want to talk. You'd be the guy that's moaning and whining all the time. Nobody wants to be around that. So good things can't come from that. But if you have a positive attitude, you know, some good things might come out of a bad situation. So yeah, that was, I learned a lot from this one, because usually it's basically just common understanding amongst function bands and musicians. There's a minimum fee. You just do that. And I'm surprised people do it for less, because even the minimum fee is like, it's okay. Barely makes it worth it sometimes. You know, when you practice their songs, and it's not doing the songs that's the hard thing, because like, Superstition, everybody plays Superstition the same way, but it's when they have all these standard tunes but the arrangements of them that make it slightly awkward, and you have to go through the whole song. And when you're doing 30 songs at 7 minutes each or 5 minutes each, it's just a long time to sit down and go through stuff, even though you know the song anyways. But yeah, that's what it's like to be a musician sometimes. It's like, it's part of the gig, and it's summer, so loads of people are getting married, there's loads of festivals on, and can't complain. It's work. It's good. So yeah, moral of the story, stay positive, be a good person, and hopefully good things come out of it. So let's get into some music. I got a new pedal. It is a new pedal, but I replaced one of my Expression pedals. So I used to have an AMT X50, EX50 or whatever. It's a great pedal, small footprint, and I think they do a volume pedal that's the same. It fit on my board perfectly, but it just does one thing. It works as an expression pedal for the 8-9. Worked great. Was really happy with it, but I wanted to do more. So, and for some reason, it didn't go 0 to 100 heel to toe. Sometimes on the 8-9, I might be doing something wrong, or the pots were different. I don't know, but it's got two different outputs on it. So you can control two different pedals, which is really cool. On the AMT, so it's a great pedal to have, great expression pedal, it's awesome, but I just kind of needed something different. And before that, I had a wheel expression pedal, dead easy to work with, and I kind of got used to that. So part of me was missing that, and the fact that it looks slightly different than a volume expression pedal, because whenever I look at someone's pedal board, I don't know, I just don't like expression pedals and volume pedals. You look at it, it's like, I don't know. My theory on volume pedals is just use your volume knob on your guitar. It does the same thing. But sometimes I do get it that you kind of want overdrives and then your volume pedal and then your delays. So you get that crunchy thing going into your delays so that you can swell in. Sometimes if you have it before, you don't get as much breakup going into the delays, if that makes sense to anyone. So yeah, you can imagine that. But that would be the only reason I'd use a volume pedal. But this new pedal I got, Sean at Audiostone, was really helpful. He doesn't have this on the line, but it was just a small adjustment for him to make. It's a company based in Manchester, England. Great guy, really helpful. It was really affordable for what I needed. I was ready to pay a bit more, but it was really affordable. So give him a shout out. I'll have his details in the show notes. But this pedal right here, same footprint as the EX50, but I could do three different things. So I didn't know this until he sent me the pedal or we're chatting, that on the H9, you can have expression and use an auxiliary switch. So what I'm doing is this pedal has got two wheels, two expression wheels, and then an auxiliary switch. So one of the wheels is my glow volume. So it's pretty much like a volume pedal. And it's really useful if you're in the studio, just to have that manual touch on it, on a volume. And then the auxiliary switch, which controls, at the moment, I've set it to control the tempo on the H9. I tried to have like an on-off function, but I can't get that to work yet. But at the moment, it's just doing tempo. So if I'm using a tremolo or a reverb or a delay on the H9, I can just use the auxiliary switch. And then the wheel under that is used as an expression pedal. So I can just set the parameters on the H9 and just use it like that. The only thing I forgot to ask for, and then I've been back and forth with Sean, he thought he should add that in, but then he thought he was being silly, so he didn't add it in. It's an inverted switch on the inside. So when you're turning the expression one way, it'll increase on the H9, but at the moment it kind of decreases when you go up on the expression. But like, the parameters are arbitrary because you can set the parameters to whatever you want. So I've changed those around, but I think I'm going to send it back so you can add that switch. So if you ever get something like this, I think if he makes any more, he'll add that switch anyways. But it's like a little switch that inverts the polarity, I guess. The MTX EX50 has that. It's just like a little side thing. So it'll be 0 to 100 heel to toe, or 0 to 100 toe to heel. So I don't know why someone would do that. I think in this case, depending on what your pedal receives as expression, you'd use the inverted switch. I don't know. Anyways, but if you do get it, just get it with an inverted switch. So it's great. Great little pedal. It's awesome. Get one if you need it. If you want something that has a small footprint and you need it to do three different things, that's the one to get. That's the one I got. Excellent. So we're going to go into some music now. I made a Black Keys inspired track, which is fun to make, actually. I was listening to a lot of Black Keys. I watched a YouTube video of the drummer going through his stuff and how he mics up his setup, and looked amazing. Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun, like how he mics his kit. And he's got the most random microphone in his setup, was a 57 in the next room pointing the other way. Yeah, go figure. But shout out to that guy. I can't remember his name, but shout out to that guy. Just go watch that video. It's incredible. I'll have it in the show notes as well. So we're going to go through this track step by step. Let me just show you what the whole thing sounds like. Sounds like this. So yeah, that's the track. The whole inspiration came from just listening to loads of Black Keys and then watching the rig breakdown of Dan Orbeck, I think he's called, the guitarist, singer. And that looked amazing. He had some killer gear. And then on Black Friday, that sound that does some amazing drum kit sounds and drum loops and drum samples, they had just had a flat 50% off anything you'd buy. So I went through everything and I really loved Darren King's sound. So I bought a bunch of Darren King stuff. Yeah, that's what I used. And this one of the loops actually from that pack just sounds killer. So the loop by itself sounds like this. So I kind of went with that sound. Sounds pretty cool. I had to slow it down a bit. And the cool thing about Ableton is you don't lose the tone of drums or, well, guitars or anything when you slow it down or speed it up. Well, that's within a certain range. If you try to speed something and slow something down too much, you start hearing it. Especially if it's cymbals, it doesn't really analyze that. So that is just the drums. So I'm just going to go through stuff really quick. This is what the main riff sounds like. So I went ahead and looped that over and over, and then I just started layering stuff over the top. So the next thing I put in were these guitars just some chords with a slapback delay. One other thing I put in was the riff, but I used, because I don't have access to, well, I don't have a bass right here at the moment. Sometimes I use bass synth, and sometimes I'll just play guitar and then pitch it through the Ultra Pitch Shift Waves plugin, and this is what it sounds like with that on. So that gives me that frequency, really, that bass frequency. Some more layers I put in. I think one of the funnest ones to do was, my wife is notoriously known for having a killer whistle. So I got her to come in and just whistle a bunch of riffs in the microphone. And this is one of the main motifs he came up with, which was which is actually pretty cool. And this is what it sounds like. Double tracked with a lot of verb. Yeah. So I was trying to use that a bit more in the track, but I think use it once and keep it appropriate is the way to go. If anybody wants to use that, I'm just going to release all the stems. If anybody wants to use that and, you know, sample it or whatever, I'd be really interested to see what you guys come up with. The other interesting thing was I really got into using the Tremolator by Soundtoys. It sounds incredible. And the keys track that kind of comes few bars in after like establishing the riff sounds like this. Distorted piano with a Tremolator and a bunch of goodness. Yeah. So that's what that sounds like. And literally, I think I just played something really simple on the piano. I just programmed it in. It was really simple. It was just like a root and fifth or something the whole way through. And kind of, yeah, that's what I did. And I put some feedback in. So layered in some feedback. Sounds like this. So that's cool. Just a bit of feedback. Just to have something happening underneath the riff and everything, just to keep it interesting, I guess. And then the other thing I got really excited about, because that main guitar riff I played using the JHS color box and using more of that fuzzy kind of character, and then I was like, man, I just need to use a bit more fuzz in it. So I cranked the whole thing up, double tracked this riff, and this is what I came up with for kind of the end of the song. This is what it sounds like. Yeah, that's what that sounds like. Now, that was really fun to do, because I thought, well, I'll come up with the fuzz part. Came with that simple fuzz part, a bit delay, and then I was like, hang on, what if I double track that? And I know loads of people double track fuzz stuff, but I was like, man, I'll do that, double track it, and then the spacing of the fuzz each time I play it is slightly different, so the stereo image it gives is really interesting. And I was really, I thought it was really fun to, you know, play that. So that's the track. I'll have everything available in the show notes, so you can download the stems, do whatever you want with them, use it for your own stuff. For this one, I didn't have any specific guitar-y settings. I mean, I used the Pink Panther for a bit of slapback. I used the humbuckers for the main riff. I used single coils on the guitar for that kind of jangly chord sound. And that's about it. Maybe I used a chula for some of the stuff, just to give it a bit more body. But yeah, hope you enjoyed that one. That was the podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed this one and enjoyed my rant. Hopefully it wasn't too much of a rant and more of an inspirational, stay positive people kind of thing. Subscribe if you find any of this stuff useful. I always try to give out, always try to have a track for you all. Presets, Kemper profiles, something useful for mostly guitarists, because I'm a guitarist, but hopefully something useful for everybody else out there. If you have any questions or any requests, let me know. Contact us via the social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. The handle is @HeavyReverb. I'll try to get back to everybody as soon as possible. The website is www.heavyreverb.com, and you can find all these resources in the show notes or on the website. So it's dead easy to find. On the website, you'll find some Kemper profiles. You'll find that transition guitar pack I made a while ago for editors and vloggers and anyone that wants to use stuff. By the way, all the stuff I make, all the tracks I make are royalty free, so you can just use them free of charge. You won't get in trouble. You won't get flagged up by Apple saying, you know, you have to pay royalties to someone. No, I make these and give them out. I've got some plans in the future to get some other people on board with some of these tracks. So until next time, everybody, have a good one. See yous.